Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nida Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the last two words on the bottom of Daf Chof Hei Amid Beis. You will notice that there is a diamond that surrounds the expression Sandal Disnan, but before we go on with the Gemara itself, we have a topic heading and structural note in the outside margin under what we label the Nosei, the topic, and Mivneh, structural note, which in this case are combined into one. You see a diamond featured, and in quotation marks, Sandal Disnan, because we have that noted here, and at the top of Chof Vov, Amid Aleph, the second line, you'll see another diamond. These are Shnei Tchumim, two areas of Halacha, Shebohen Muskar, Muskar Sandal. The Sandal is mentioned. The Sandal, of course, is that which we've learned in the previous year, a fetus that comes out in a crushed form or flattened form, indicating that it was part of a twin pregnancy, and the other child, the other one, because of pressure, caused this one to be flattened. So HaGemara Mevareres Lamai Hilchasa. The Gemara wants to know, will analyze why Sandal is featured in these two respective areas. The Gemara, now, after having said Sandal Disnan, continuing at the top of Chof Vov Amid Aleph, Gabi Bechoros, in Maseches Bechoros, the Sandal is mentioned. The question is, Lamai Hilchasa. Now, this Gemara is very abbreviated, but Rashi fills in the details. In Maseches Bechoros, there is a Mishnah that says, Hamapeles Sandal Vehabo Acharov equals Bechor Lenachlo Vein Bechor Lekoin. A woman who miscarries a sandal, and that which is born after it, or we should say that which is born after the sandal, is considered a firstborn with regard to receiving a double portion, but not with regard to pidyon haben. It does not have to be redeemed. That is what the Mishnah says. So it mentions the woman who miscarries a sandal, and it says that the normal birth that's after it, and the havamina is, the thought is, that when the Mishnah there says habo acharov, it means a year later. So a woman miscarried today a sandal, and a year later a regular birth takes place. So the Mishnah tells us that that regular birth will be considered a firstborn with regard to laws of inheritance, receiving a double portion, but not with regard to the need for redemption, as is characteristic of a firstborns in general. Well, the question here is, why does the Mishnah mention the fact that the child born a year later is going to be a firstborn with regard to nachla and not with regard to redemption? If that's the case, why is there any mention of the sandal? Even without emphasis on the sandal, when a sandal is born, there is another vlad with it. So let us look at the Rashi, Lamai Hilchasa, second line from the top. The thought being right now is Labo Achrov, that when the Mishnah says a woman miscarries a sandal and it tells us that the one that's born afterwards is considered a Bechor Lenachlo and not Lekoyhein, that it's a reference to a child born a year later. Oh, Lesof Shnataim, after 2 years, Komairi is speaking. Philomali Sandal, why make mention of the sandal, valo below sandal, even without the sandal, potar vlad de bahadei es habo achrov. The accompanying child, we mentioned earlier that the sandal is part of a twin pregnancy. So there was another child with the sandal when she was pregnant with it. So that is the one that will cause the following birth to be a non-full-fledged Bechor. In other words, the accompanying Vlad that's with the sandal causes this exemption, so to speak. So the Rashi goes on to say, Umeshani, the Gemara, will answer, Labo Achrov, Klomar, Lekach Husker Sandal, Im Yotza Vlad Sheimo Achrov. We're not talking at all about what we thought about a birth that takes place a year after the sandal is born, but rather we're talking about a regular child that is born together with the sandal having come out first. So the normal child that comes out a few minutes later together with the sandal a little bit afterwards is no longer considered a Bechor for redemption purposes. That's what the Gemara answers at the top line. Labo Acharov, the expression Labo Acharov that is found in Masechet, in the Mishnah, in Bechoros, equals Bechor Lenachlo Ve'ein Bechor Lekoyim. It's a reference to the child that's born right after the sandal, in a matter of minutes even. It will no longer be needed to be redeemed, because the sandal is the first one to have emerged from the womb, and it's that factor that determines whether or not something is a Bechor Lekoyim. Therefore, the normal birth that takes place, the normal child born together with the sandal, if the sandal emerged first, so the second child will not be in need of redemption. Sandal desnan gabi krisus lemai hilchasa. In Maseches Krisus, where the Gemara discusses, the Mishnah there mentions, discusses a woman who, after giving birth, she needs to bring sacrifices as women who give birth require. So we want to know here, what is the significance of a sandal birth in that context? Once again, Rashi explains that the question is, why do you have to mention a woman needs to bring korbanos in the event that she gives birth to a sandal, when she'll need to bring korbanos because of the accompanying birth that she experiences, the birth that comes with the sandal? So the Gemara explains with we'll call it practical nafkamina, a reason for knowing about the sandal in this case. She'im, and we have little numbers here because there are, in a sense, two answers to what the significance of teaching about the sandal's emergence or birth, what role it plays. So number one, she'im teled vlad derech doifen, the sandal derech rechem. If a woman experienced she had a twin pregnancy, but the Vlad, the regular kid, was delivered in a C-section, a cesarean birth. And at this point, before we get to Shitas Reb Shimon, a cesarean birth does not necessitate the bringing of sacrifices. And that's based on Droshus on Psukim. The sandal, though, comes out through the regular birth canal. What is the rule with regard to such a woman and her need or lack thereof to bring korbanos? So the point is, the maisa korban asandal, she will bring the sacrifices associated with childbirth because the sandal emerged through the birth canal. Just to repeat the main point, the chiddush here is that the normal child came through the doifen, which does not necessitate a sacrifice, and yet the sandal birth will require the bringing of a korban. Question: Ule Rabbi Shimon d'Omar yoytze derech doifen vlad mal yehu mai ikol lemeimar. According to Rabbi Shimon, a C-section is considered a regular, full-fledged birth with regard to the need to bring sacrifices. So we know that this woman who had a C-section plus a birth canal emergence of the sandal, so even without the sandal, she'll have to bring a sacrifice because of the C-section delivery. So what of what significance is the fact that this woman also gave birth to a sandal in the context of sacrifices? So the answer is, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, She'im Teled Vlad B'yoso Yvedes Koychovim. Imagine the following case. A woman was interested in converting to Judaism, and she was a woman who was pregnant with a twin pregnancy. The Vlad emerged, the regular child emerged from this woman while she was still a Gentile. A Gentile is not obligated to bring sacrifices for childbirth. And after the Vlad emerged through the normal channel, that's the sandal, the normal channel is irrelevant because we're talking now, right now, according to Reb Shimon, who makes no distinction between the C-section and regular birth, but the case is she gave birth to a Vlad, to a living child, when she was still a Gentile, and she converted at that moment, in other words, right after that birth, the sandal, the achashin is gaira. And a sandal emerged from this woman, this newly converted woman. The Maisa Korban sandal, she will bring a sacrifice because of the sandal birth. So that the sandal birth, the flattened child, is the make or break, so to speak, with regard to the bringing of sacrifices. Namely, she will bring a sacrifice because of the sandal birth that took place after she converted. Amru Rabbonon Kamei de Rav Papa. The Rabbonon said over this teaching to Rav Papa, and the question came up, Umi Isnu Lahani Shinuyi. Are these answers that we've given? We said, Lamai Hilchasa, to the case of Sandal by Bechoros, and Lamai Hilchasa to the case of Sandal by Krisus. Are these answers accurate? Vaha Tanya. Kishehen Yoitzin, when they emerge, Ein Yoitzin Ella Kruchin. They come out bound to one another. So you can't say, for example, that she converted in the interim. They come out together. Omar Rav Papa, Shma Mina. We conclude from this, from the fact that sandal is mentioned by Croesus, and we mentioned also sandal by the case of Bechoros. So Shma Mino, we must conclude Michrach Korach Le Vlad La Sandal Apalgei Umishalchif Le Klape Reshe. That when the Mishnah, when the Brisa says that they are bound in the following fashion. The head of the living child is opposite the midsection of the sandal, so they're wrapped around each other, so to speak, but not in an exact fashion, but rather the head of the Vlad is opposite the palge, the halfway mark, the midsection of the sandal. And the expression umishalchif le klapi reshe means that the head of the living child ends up pushing on the sandal, which is dead, pushes the sandal out first. Therefore, with that imagery in mind, the Gemara goes over the cases of Bechoros and Croesus, and you can see how we're employing the double underline to emphasize these two topics. And we also have, we've noted here, a Roman numeral number 1. There will be a couple of approaches. And we have a Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin, which reads as follows. You see the triangle is featured. And Roman numerals 1 and 2. These are Shnei Lishonos, Ve'inyin Tsuras Hashchiva Shel Hasandolim Avlad B'shas Yitziosan. Where two Lishonos, two versions, or two approaches to this issue of how the Vlad and the sandal, the living child and the sandal, are positioned with regard to one another as they are emerging. So that we'll be able to give credence to the answers that we gave above. So the Gemara is essentially going to be preserving the answers we gave above and showing how it actually works. We'll also be using a dot underline to emphasize the expressions Derech Roshehem or Derech Margaloisehem. That means a birth where they come out head first or they come out feet first. So the Gemara explains. Gabi Bechoros. In the Bechoros case, we needed to establish that the living child would be a Bechor only Lenachla, not a Bechor LeKehuna. What pushes us into that answer? That is because we're saying the sandal emerges first. It's the peterechem. It's the one that exits the womb first, and hence it's dead. Therefore, there's no pidyon haben on a dead birth, but it was the first one out of the womb, so it's the first one to emerge, and hence any subsequent birth will not necessitate redemption. So Gabi Bechoros, Kagon Shiyotsu Derech Roshehem. These two children are going to come out head first. The sandal Kodim Venofik. The sandal is going to come out first. As we mentioned before, they are wrapped around each other. However, the head of the living one is opposite the midsection of the sandal. And since the living one has life to it, it ends up pushing out the sandal head first. And that makes it the peter rechem. And therefore, there's no need to redeem the vlad, the healthy child that comes out afterwards. Gabi krisus, in the case of krisus, where we spoke about the conversion, and it's only because of the sandal that the woman will be bringing a sacrifice as a result of the birth. So the Gemara explains, shiotsu derech margaloi sehem. The child, the living child, the vlad and the sandal are wrapped around each other in the same fashion, where the head of the living child is opposite the midsection of the sandal. However, they are coming out; they're coming out feet first. So, in what happens when they're coming out feet first? The vlad kodim venofik. The vlad is going to emerge first. The vlad is the healthy or the living child is going to emerge first. And as a result, we can now go back to the conversion scenario with the vlad emerging before she converted, so that's not going to mechayev her in bringing the sacrifice. When she converts, in between the emergence it was after the vlad and before the sandal. The sandal emerges after she's already converted, and the sandal is going to be the one responsible for her bringing a sacrifice. And that's the chiddush, that a sandal is the mechayev, the thing that obligates in the bringing of the sacrifice. Rav Huna bar Tachlifa Mishmei Durava Omar Afilu Tema Mitzuntzamim. We see the second approach is, they are coming out literally together, one opposite or equal, or one right next to the other. And this is in contrast to the Mishalchif Le Klapi Reshe, where the living one is pushing on the sandal. So here, they come out together. The Epuch Shmaitza, and you'll see that the descriptions we gave above are to be reversed with regard to the topics, as will be self-evident. Gabi Bechoros, where we require the sandal to come out first in order to make the second one a non-Bechor L'Koyein. So, in the case of Bechoros, Shiyotsu Derech Margaloi Sehem. They are coming out, again, they're opposite each other, together, literally together, coming out feet first. Vlad the isbe chiyusa sorech velo nofik. The vlad, which has life to it, is going to try to stick to the inside of the mother and not come out. Sandal de les be chiyusa sorech benofik. The sandal, which is dead, is going to just slip right out. So that even though they are clasping each other at the end of the pregnancy together, when it comes to the actual birth, the sandal is going to slip out first. Therefore, the and we're mentioning there's going to it's going to slip out feet first. Therefore, the healthy child is not going to require redemption. Gabi krisus, where it was important for the vlad to emerge first, shiyotsu derech roshehen, they came out head first. Vlad de isbe chiyusa, a healthy child that has life to it, midunofik reshi havileda, with the emergence of the head alone, is considered the birth. So in our conversion story, the live child comes out, its head, they come out together, let's emphasize that, they're coming out together, but the live child, since it has significance, it has life to it, so its head is considered its birth. And that is taking place before she converted. Sandal ad dinofik rubeya. Sandal birth, it's true it's considered a birth, and is mechayev a sacrifice, but that's only when the majority of the sandal emerges. But at the point that the majority of the sandal emerged, she had converted prior to the emergence of the roiv, so that the mechayev of her bringing the korban will be the sandal. The Mishnah, Shilya Babayas, Abayas Tome. If a placenta is found in a house, a human placenta, the house is considered Tome because of Oyel Hames, the overshadowing of the dead. Lo Sha Shilya Vlad, we're not saying that the afterbirth is the placenta is considered the child. Eloshein Shilya below Vlad. Rather, it's because a Shilya wouldn't have emerged unless there was a child. So you have a house in which there is a dead there's a dead baby somewhere. So we know for sure that there is Tumas Meis in this house. Reb Shimon Omer, Nimoy Kavlad Ad Shelo Yotza. The case of finding a shilya does not indicate that a vlad emerged. Rather, the shilya, the placenta, came out. In the meantime, the vlad has dissolved and got mixed up with blood of birth. And the blood of the birth process is more in quantity than the dissolved child. And therefore, the dissolved child is botel beroiv. It becomes voided in the majority of the birth blood, and hence, according to Rav Shimon, there will be no Tumas Meis, because birth blood does not create Tumas Meis. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source which describes the Shilya. Shilya Trilosa Doima Luchut Shel Orev. The shilya, when it becomes first noticeable in the mother, it is like a strand of orev thread, thicker thread than the shti thread in a loom. V'soifa doimel keturmus, and at the end it appears to be like a turmus. The turmus is a type of vegetation. V'chalula kechatzotzeres, and it's hollow like a horn, like a trumpet. The ain shilya p'chusa mitefach. There is no shilya that's less than a tefach, a handbreadth in size. Rav Shimon Lil Omer, shilya deme le kurkavon shel tarnegolim, shadakin yoitzin mimena. The shilya is like the kurkavon organ in a bird, from which the intestines of the bird emerge. So the kurkavon is one of the organs of digestion, and from it there emerges the intestine, and that's what a shilya resembles. You can see that we have a bracket that appears, and a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see a vertical dashed dotted line, and this marking continues till Omid Beis, quite a few lines down from the top. The reason for this bracketed section is explained by our note that we supply generally with when brackets appear. On the inside margin, you'll see a starred comment. Achrei Sugraim, a Gemara Choizeres Ladun B'Shilya. After the bracket section, the Gemara will return to the Shilya discussion. B'Socham, a Gemara Dona B'Hilchus B'Alochus Shishur and Tefach. Within the bracket section, the Gemara will deal with other areas of halacha where the dimension that's of significance is a tefach, a handbreadth. Before going into the Gemara itself, we also have a Nosei Mivneh heading on the other margin, and we've indicated this Nosei Basograim, the Nosei in the bracketed section, and the structural note, you'll notice in the Gemara itself some house shapes appear. These are Chamisha Dvarim Shishiuron Tefach, five areas where the dimension needed is a handbreadth. L'kamana Gemara Tishal, later the Gemara will ask when the bowtie shape appears, V'ho'ika, meaning Hare Yesh Oid Dugmois Shel Halachas B'Tefach. There are other examples of halachas that are governed by a dimension of a tefach. So, as we said, this discussion of a tefach and how it applies to different areas of halacha is the subject of this entire bracketed section. That having been said, the Gemara, Tanya, Rebbe Shaya, Zira, Demin Chavraya, Rebbe Shaya brings in a quotes the following Tanaic source, Chamisha Shurun Tefach. There are five points that have a dimension of a handbreadth, the Elohein. Shilya, Shofar, Shedra, Doifin, Sukkah, Vo'ezov. You can see we've listed them as 5 points. And when we continue in the Gemara looking at the houses, those 5 points are featured. Shilya, Hadamar, the issue of the Shilya and its association with the Tefach is as we stated. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. You can align this with the arrow just above. And you can see on that line the dashed underlined expression, Mitefach. And that was in the context of the placenta. Continuing in the Gemara, Shofar Desanya, the case of Shofar and its association with a tefach. The source says, Kamiye Shiur Shofar, how large must a shofar be? Shepiresh Piresh Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Kadesh Yechzenu Biyadoi, Vire Lekan Lekan, tefach. It should be large enough that you could hold the shofar, and we're talking here about a very small shofar, that you should be able to hold it in your hand, and it should protrude on either side of your hand, so that the shear of the shofar is a hand breadth, because that's what's contained in your hand, and it's noted that it also shall be visible on either side of your hand as well, in order to be considered a kosher shofar. Shedra, Mahi, what's the issue of Tefach by Shedra? Shedra is a spine. In this case, the Gemara is referring to the spine of the Lulav. The Yomer of Panach, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Shedra Shel Lulav Tzorch Shiyed Yoytze Min Hahadas Tefach. The Shedra of a Lulav, with the assumption that everyone is familiar with what a Lulav looks like, there's a central part of the lulav, as you're looking at it vertically, where in effect, the lulav leaves are fused into one thick type substance. So that is the shedra of lulav, which runs almost the entire length of lulav. It must extend beyond the hadasim, which are attached to the lulav, by a tefach. So you see, in the context of the shedra, the need for a tefach. It must extend the tefach more than the hadasim in order to be appropriate. Doifen sukkah, the wall of a sukkah. What's the association of tefach with sukkah walls? The sanya shtaim kilchosin u'shlishus afilu tefach. The minimum number of walls that a sukkah must have are 2 complete walls. 2 walls having the minimum shear required of a wall, and a third wall that is, in a sense, or in effect, just a tefach. It would be like a
board that's a tefach wide. And that is learned through Gzeres HaKosovs that are featured in Masechet Sukkah, but for our purposes we see the idea of a tefach, which represents the third wall, as is relevant to Sukkah. Ezov, what's the connection of Ezov to the shiur of a tefach? The Tani Rabbi Chiya, Ezov tefach, the shiur of an Ezov. Now, an Ezov is used in the Torah process, so it must be a tefach. The Ezov is, of course, a branch of a certain type of tree or bush. Omar Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa Dorish Shilo Ishkvar Tamrasa. Rav Chanina tells us that Shilo, from the village of Tamrasa, said Tlas Masnisa Vitati Shmaitza Shiro Tefach. There are three Mishnayas and two Amoraic teachings where the dimension that's featured is a Tefach. Well, 3 and 2 is 5. That's a number familiar to us. The Gemara asks, Tarti, but there are two Shmaitzas. Chadahi, there's only one Shmaitza. Shmaitza is an Amoraic teaching. If you look above, you'll notice that there, the houses were associated with four framed sections. The Shilya being that which was the first, that was the framed section above. Shofar, which is obvious. And you have Doifin Sukkah and Ezov. Those are 4 of the 5 cases. The only case that didn't appear together with the Tanaic source was the issue of the Shedra Shel Lulav. So the Gemara is asking, why do you say that there are two Shmaitzes? There's Chadohi, only one of them is a Shmaitza, and that's the case of the Shedra Shel Lulav. That's an Amoraic teaching. The rest were based on Tanaic sources. So why does Shilo tell us that there are two Shmaitzes? Omar Abaye answers, Ema, restate that which we had above. Ema, Omar Rabbi Chiya Ezov Tefach. Notice we have a little star to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text. You can go up just a couple lines. You see the parallel star. Instead of saying, like we said originally, the Toni Rabbi Chiya, Toni is an expression indicating a Tanaic source, and that Rabbi Chiya was saying over Tanaic source. No, the restatement here of the Gemara is that Rabbi Chiya taught the din of Ezov Tefach as not part of a Tanaic source, but as an Amoraic teaching. Rabbi Chiya, interestingly, was a person who lived at the transition point historically between the period of the Tanoim and the period of the Amoraim. So he actually functioned in a dual capacity, and that's what's reflected here. So if we take Rabbi Chiya's teaching and convert it into an Amoraic teaching as opposed to a presentation of a Tanaic source, you have two things that are Shmaitzes. You've got the Shedra Shel Lulav teaching, that of Rabbi Yochanan, and you've got Rabbi Chiya's teaching of Ezov Tefach. Now the Gemara asks, Vesu Lecha, are there no other examples of things or of halachas that are dependent on the dimension of a Tefach? Vehoiko, and you see this series marking a bow tie shape around the expression Vehoiko. Each time we're going to introduce another case where a Tefach seems to be the required shear for whatever. So Vesuleka, are there no other examples? Vehoiko Tefach HaTefach HaRum Tefach Meruba Mevi Es HaTuma Vechoitzes Vifnei HaTuma. If you have an area that measures an airspace, an air pocket, that measures a cubic tefach, so that you can have two sides and a covering that cover an area of a cubic hand breadth, let us say there is a piece of mace in that cubicle. So it will be contained and protected and be contained and restrained into that area, and that's what we mean by choytzeitz b'fnei tuma. It serves as a block to the tuma going out, going extending or penetrating that area. Maybe a tuma is a situation where within this cubic tefach there is a piece of corpse meat and there is something that is tohor,
So being that it's in an ohel, it's under an overshadowing, and this is the minimum shear of an overshadowing, the tumah will be communicated even without actual contact, but the fact they're under the same overhang, the same covering, the tumah will be communicated to the tohor item. If, however, the top of this cubicle is lower, is less than a tefach from the bottom, so the tumah will simply go straight up, but not spread around to affect something off to its side. So the question is, isn't there this din of oil tefach? Why wasn't that in the list of things whose shear is a tefach? The Gemara answers, tefach kwarminon, tefach al tefach lo kwarminon. We're not dealing with cubic areas or with three-dimensional measuring. And hence, our list is not going to include this case of oil hames. V'ha ika even hayotze min atanur tefach umin akira shalosh etzbos equals chibur. A tanur is an earthenware vessel, and as such, it itself absorbs tumah through things that are tumah that are in its airspace. However, once a tanur becomes tumah, if something comes into contact with the exterior of the tanur, Rashi points out, tumah will be communicated to that particular item. Let's say that there's something protruding from the tanur. In this case, the source says evan. An evan, a stone, is attached to a tanur and protruding out of its side. If it's protruding a tefach, or we can say up till a tefach, is considered a chibur. In the case of a kira is a smaller type, it's a unit also used for cooking, on the top of which you can place, or it has room for two pots. The protruding stone there will be measured up till three etzbois. Is considered a chibur, it's considered something that's attached, that you're not going to eventually cut off of the tanur. So that you see here that this, and of course the practical point being that if something touches this even that measures a tefach, it is viewed as a handle. It has a din of what's called a yad, and therefore if the tanur became tumei, so contact with this even will result in tumah also, in so far as the even functions as a yad. We will see more about the tanur and things protruding from it as we go on in the sugya. So the question is raised. You see that the shiur tefach is associated with the even extending from the tanur. Why wasn't that mentioned? Ki kwarminon, the Gemara answers, hecha debotzir mitefach lo chazi. That is, the shiurim we gave above are applied to cases where something that's less than a tefach, it will have no benefit, have no purpose. Avohoch, in the case of the tanur, if you have a stone that's less than a tefach, kol shekein debotzir. Avalhocha, let's read that again. Avalhocha, in the case of tanur, kol shekein debotzir mitefach yad tanur hu. It's considered the extension of the tanur. If anything, if something is too long, so it won't be considered a yad because it's so long, you're probably going to cut it off. But something that's protruding, a tefach, is considered a connection to the tanur. And certainly something that's less than a tefach, it's all the more connected to the tanur, so to speak. So, that is the reason why our list above didn't include the case of the Evan Hayetzim and Atanor, because the case of Evan, our list wants to include things that less than a Tefach would have no significance. Here, in the case of the Tanor, less than a Tefach will be all the more considered a Yad, an extension of the Tanor. Another question. Vo'iko Tanure Bonos Tefach. Tanure Bonos are little ovens, little cooking devices, if you will, that are made for children. It's a type of toy, it seems. And regarding the tanurei bonos, they are measured in terms of a tefach. And less than a tefach, it would have no significance. Desanyo, you have a Tanaic source that deals with a lot of details concerning ovens or tanurs. It says, tanur tchiloso arbo'o. A tanur is made, and it must measure four tefachim initially in order to be subject to Kabbalah's Tuma. If you have a completed four tefach tanur, it will mekabel Tuma. Ushiyarov Dalid, Divrei Rabbi Meir. And if you have a tanur that was, let's say, very large, and it became shattered or smashed or broken, and there remains four tefachim of useful tanur there, so that will be something that could mekabel Tuma. These apply to a tanur that was initially very large. Aval bekoton tchilasoi kol shehu mishetigma malachto ushiorov berubo. But with a koton, the initial size of it is a kol shehu, and the Gemara will relate to that in a moment. It will mekabel tuma when it's a kol shehu in size, as long as its manufacture is completed, the tigmar malachtoi. And the shiorov, in order for that which remains from such a small tanur, we will say if it's the majority of the original size, so it'll mekabel tuma. The kama kol shehu, what is that shiur known as? Anything, kolshu means any small amount. Omar Rabbi Yanai, tefach, the shiur of kolshu mentioned in this source is really a reference to a tefach. So the source was describing a tanur koton. Well, it must, if it has a shiur of kolshu, meaning a tefach, so it will makabal tumo. So, and here the Gemara explains, Omar Rabbi Yanai, tefach, shekein oisin tanurei bonos tefach. Tanurei bonos were these clay ovens made for children. They were fashioned in a tefach size. So the question right now is, why did the original list of five halachas that relate to a tefach not include this case of tanur, where we make reference to the tanur bonos as a tefach? So the Gemara answers, the plukto lo komairi. Things that are taught as part of a legal controversy are not included in the original list. And here we have the plukto, the controversy here is concerning a shir of a tefach with regard to a tanur. Rabbi Meir doesn't mention anything about a tefach. It's only the chachomim that mention. So you see it's something that's taught as part of a machloikis, so that is why this is not taught in the original list of five things that are related to a tefach. Hashta to osis lahachi. Now that we've come to this point, ha nami pluktohi. The case of the yad of the tanur, which was one of our questions, you don't have to raise that as a question anymore. The katoni seifa. The seifa of the yad tanur shows that it's part of a machloikis. It says there, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, lo omru tefach elo min hatanur velakoisel. The shiur tefach, meaning that if it's, you know, up till a tefach, it's considered an attachment to the tanur, and hence it could communicate tuma. That's only if you're talking about the side of the tanur that's next to the neighboring wall. In such a case, we say up till a tefach and no more, because a protrusion of more than a tefach is considered an inconvenience. It's pushed. Your interest is to have it as close as with safety in mind, as close to the wall as possible. So protrusions more than a tefach upset the owner, and he'll cut it off. Hence, he has no interest in it, and therefore it's not considered a chibur to the tanur. However, Rabbi Yehuda adds that whole din of a tefach is only with regard to the tefach between the tanur and the wall. However, on the other side of the tanur, even a long extension would be considered a chibur and would communicate tumah. So, being that the shiur of tefach by a tanur is part of a machlokis, you see, the Tanakama did not mention anything about a distinction to be made between a side facing wall and side facing the room. Reb Yehuda does make that distinction. So you see that this is a machlokes, and as we said before, the original list of five does not contain matters that are part of a machlokes. Question. Voika Mizgeres Tefach. Mizgeres was featured in the Torah in the construction of the Shulchan. It had a type of frame around the around its edge, and it measured a tefach, as is taught by the Torah. So why isn't that mentioned in the list of things that are measured by a tefach? The Gemara answers, b'diksivon lo komairi. The list of five that we had on Omid Aleph is not interested in including things that are written in the psukim. And the mezgeres of the Shulchan is mentioned in the psukim. Ve'iko kaporas tefach. Well, isn't there the thickness of the covering of the Oroin Habris, the ark that contained the Ten Commandments? It had a golden cover to it, which had a thickness of a tefach. Why isn't that included in the original list of things that are measured by a tefach? The five things, that is. So the Gemara answer is, Bekotshin lo komairi. The list does not include things that are related to the Beis Hamikdash. Ve'iko dayo lekoira shehi rechava tefach. This source is dealing with the beam that covers the entrance to an alleyway, with regard to halachas of Erevin and Shabbos, and in order for carrying to be allowed in such an alleyway, an alleyway that opens onto a Rishus Arabim, one of the solutions or suggestions that are made by the halacha is a kora, a beam going across the top of the entranceway to this particular alley. What is the size or the thickness of that beam? So the source tells us that it's enough if the kora has a width of a tefach. Well, here you have tefach as relates to the kora. Why isn't this included in the original list of halachas that are measured by a tefach? The answer is b'derabbanan lo komairi. This is a rabbinic law, and the list was not interested in discussing or adding rabbinic teachings. So let's read this again. B'derabbanan lo komairi elo b'diksivan v'lo meforshi shirai. What the list is interested in including are items that are referred to by the Torah, but its dimension is not spelled out. So that's what serves as the common denominator to that list. They're ksivan and not velomifreshi shirai, and their shurim are not spelled out in the Torah. Yosef Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta kamei de Rav Kahana v'Yosef v'Komar. Here you notice the bracketed section ends, so we're now going back to discuss the issue of the shilya, the placenta. And before we learn the Gemara, let's just glance at the topic heading that we've assigned to this section under the Nosei heading. Litlois shilya bevlad, to ascribe a shilya to a particular birth, to an actual birth. So that's litlois shilya bevlad zeh. Do we, if in the event that you find a shilya in the house, do we associate it with a known birth? Oy shemo hashilya hu mivlad acher. Or even if there's a known birth, but it might represent another child that was born. So our question is, does the shilya that we find in the house, is it to be associated with a known birth, or does it represent an additional birth? These factors will play a particularly significant role when it comes to determining a woman's cycle of blood sightings, but without getting into any of the details, because it involves a certain amount of calculation, it'll be sufficient for us simply to know that there is a nafkamina, and for our purposes, is the shilya associated with the with a known birth that took place now, or is it associated with another Vlad that we don't see? So Rav Yitzchok was sitting in the presence of Rav Kana, the Yosef Bekomer, and he said, Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, Kol Shloisha Yomim Harishonim Toilin Es Hashilia BeVlad. The example here is a Vlad emerged, a healthy child emerged in a as a birth, and within 3 days a placenta was discharged following the normal birth. So if this discharge of the placenta took place within 3 days of the birth of the child, so we ascribe the shilya to that particular child, and hence all of the laws of the woman's calculations with regard to dam leida and dam tohar, and eventually the restarting of her nida cycle, are based on the emergence of that regular child. And the placenta is simply an extension, so to speak, of that birth that took place within 3 days. Mikan ve'elech, however, if a child is born and more than 3 days lapses and then there appears a placenta that's discharged, choshishin levlad acher, then we have to take into consideration that upon the emergence of this shilya, there was another child that came with it. And as we said before, this affects all of the calculations regarding the nida cycle. Omar Lei. So he asked him, Umi Omar Rav Hochi, did Rav really say that for a period of 3 days we will associate the Shulya with the Vlad that emerged earlier? The Omar Rav, Ein Havlad Misakev Acher Chavero Klum. Rav says that there is no delay whatsoever when it comes to the birth and that which accompanied it. Ishtik. He didn't answer. Omale Dilmo Kan Benefel Kan Beben Kayoma. Maybe a distinction is to be made between we're talking about within the realm of a twin birth, but in the case of a Nefel, where the child that emerged first was a stillborn, then we will say that there will be delay of let's say up to 3 days. And kan beben kayoma, that's in a case where the child that came out was a living child. So the two halachas that we have here in the name of Rav, one saying that there could be a delay up till 3 days, and the other halacha saying there is no, when you have a twin birth, there is no delay between them. It all depends on whether the first one to emerge was a stillborn or it was healthy. So according to this particular distinction, if the thing to emerge was a stillborn, so then even if there is a delay of up till 3 days, the shilya will be associated with the stillborn. In the case of a healthy child that's born, if the shilya emerges a couple days later, we will have to take into consideration that it's not associated with the healthy child that came out, but rather it represents another birth. So at this point, the suggestion to resolve the answer was kan benefo kan beben kayoma. Amarle, so he said back, at amris lishmaitse derav beferush omarav hochi. In other words, are you saying this as your own answer? In fact, that is what Rav taught explicitly. He pila nefel, the achar kach he pila shilya. If she had a stillborn birth, and then there followed a placenta, kol shloshi amutonis hashilya bevlad. Within 3 days, we will associate the shilya with this stillborn.
and hence no reason to think or concern yourself with an additional birth. Mikan ve'elech, if there's a gap in time more than 3 days, choshishin levlad acher, then with the emergence of the shilyo, we'll assume that it is associated with a second child, with another child. And then, of course, the issue concerning her restarting of her nido period after the leido period goes by, you'll have to take into consideration the second birth as well. Yolda v'achakach epila shilya, if she had a normal birth and then a shilya emerged, afil mikan v'alasor yomim, even if 10 days lapse, ein choshishin levlad acher. So then we don't consider that there was another child. As happens from time to time in our shiurim, we have to restate things for the sake of correcting mistakes that we made a bit earlier, or to refine something. And in this case, we need to refine that which we said before concerning Rav. We had two comments of Rav. One spoke about a gap of up till 3 days, and the other point Rav made was Ein Havlad Misakiv Acher Chavero Klum, that there is no delay between births. The resolution is, as we're saying, that if the birth was that of a stillborn, so there could be a delay, and therefore we say up till 3 days, the placenta that emerges will be associated with the stillborn. More than 3 days that lapses, we will have to entertain another birth. In the case of a healthy birth, though, then there isn't any consideration of the delay of something else, and therefore, and here's the point that we have to refine, and therefore, if a placenta comes out even 10 days later, it's not to be associated with another birth, because that which came out now was a healthy birth, and there, in healthy births, there is no delay of course, beyond maybe a couple of hours, there's no delay between births. And therefore, a placenta that emerges even 10 days later has to be associated with the healthy birth that came out when it did. Shmuel v'tamidei d'Rav v'Rav Yehuda havu yasvi. We have in this story Shmuel, some students of Rav, and Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda, by the way, was also a student of Rav, but they were all seated together. Cholav Ozil, Rav Yosef Braid, Rav Menashe Midvil, Lapayu. Rav Yosef from Dvil, that's the name of a town, was coming toward them. Boli Vyosi, he was approaching them quickly. Omar, so someone spoke up, it might be Rav Yehuda spoke up and said, Osilon Gavro, there is approaching us a man, Deraminon Le Begila, Begila de Chitza, Umirmi Umatri. Literally, he's someone that you can cast at him a chaff of a wheat grain, of a wheat stalk, and he would be pushed over. In English, we call this, he's a real pushover. Sounds like a somewhat derogatory remark, but all the same, Rav Yosef is approaching them. Adohochi also, in the meantime, he came to them. Omar le Shmuel. Shmuel took up the challenge, so to speak, and asked Rav Yosef, he says, Mayoma Rav b'shilya, what does Rav comment about shilyas? Omar le hochi omar Rav. So Rav Yosef said the following. Thusly says Rav, Ein toilin es shilya ela b'dover shel kayoma. Shilyas, when we associate them, if you attempt to associate or want to associate them with a particular birth, that's only if the birth was of something that could live. However, if a woman, let us say, gave birth to some creature or organism that couldn't live, Rashi gives an example of that, where a leg is growing out of the middle of the child. It's a real mutation, or an unformed body comes out. It's called guf otum. or according to the Rabbanon, she gives birth to a creature that looks like a behemo or an oif. And then, after that, that's a dover she'enok shel kayoma, and after that, even if it's within 3 days, a shilya emerged, you will not associate the shilya with that creature that could not live. Shailinu Shmuel l'chol tamidei derav. Remember, in this story, the tamidei derav, other students of Rav, were seated with Shmuel. Shmuel, after hearing Rav Yosef's report concerning what Rav taught, he turned to the other tamidim of Rav, the Amri Lei Hochi, and they said, "Yeah, that's what Rav teaches." Hoder chazya l'Rav Yehuda bishus. Then Shmuel turned with a look of being upset. Turned looking to Rav Yehuda, being upset that Rav Yehuda was also a Talmud of Rav, didn't tell him, Shmuel, that particular important teaching. This din of when not to associate the Shulya with a known birth. Bomine Rav Yosef ben Shol me Rebbe. Hamapeles demus oirev v'shulya mahu. Let us say a woman miscarried a bird form and together with it a placenta. Amale ein toilin el bedover sheish bemino shilya. Birds don't have afterbirth, don't have placentas. They are formed in eggs. So you wouldn't be toilin, in this case of a woman who gave birth to a bird-looking thing, you're not going to associate the shilya with that bird-looking thing, because we associate shilyas only with those kind of creatures that themselves produce shilyas. Question. Kshura bo mahu. Let's say a woman produced an offspring looking like an orev, a bird, and the shilya was tied to it, to this, was wrapped around it or tied to it as it emerged. Amale, so Rebbe said, Dover Sheino Shalta, you asked about something that could not be. In other words, you're raising a question that's totally theoretical, it's something that could not be. Eisfe, the Gemara now raises an objection from a source. Hamapeles min behemo chaya v'oif v'shilya imohem. A woman miscarried, a creature looking like an animal or a bird, and a shilya with them. Bisman shashia kshura imohem. When the shilya is tied to this mutation, so you don't have to assume or suspect that the shilya is representative of another offspring. Now, what we've done with our markings, you can see we dashed underline oif and kshura, indicating the possibility of a shilya, in fact, being tied to an oif mutation from a woman who is giving birth. That's against Rebbe. Rebbe said such a thing couldn't be. Ein shilya kshurimon, if the shilya is not tied to them, then choshishin levlad acher, we will have to suspect that the shilya is representative of another birth. Hareini matil alehem choymer at the top of chof zayinam aleph choymer shnei vlados. In such a case, we have this mutation and a shulya which emerge but not attached to one another, we apply to them the stringencies of two births. Shani Omer, I would figure Shema Nimoach Shpir Shel Shulya, the embryo that was associated with the shulya at it dissolved, so the shvir would have been associated with the shulya, the Nimoach Shulya Shel Shvir, and this mutation that came out, it had a shilya, and its shilya simply dissolved. So we're seeing this mutation come out without the shilya being attached to it. It had its own shilya. And the other shilya that comes out is something coming from another embryo that happened to dissolve. Well, what do we see from this source? Tufta. This is a repudiation of Rebbe, who said that you cannot talk about a case of a shilya attached to a mutation looking like a bird form, and yet in this source we see that that could be.
With that, we conclude our shiur for today.